just like to point out that if I were in charge, this bridge would have been up to code.
Fragile bridges are a classic dungeon trap. You can't just change tradition willy-nilly.
Can we get some air conditioning in this sweltering hot box?
What?
Dude, we work in a desert. That, on top of my lack of sweat glands and this month's sun theme, have been destroying me.
Welcome to We Talk Funny. I'm your host, Ken Pringle. And today, you are listening to the first part of a two-part crossover episode. That's right. Today, you're going to be listening to my guests, Kyle Carroza and Luke Ski from Cartoon Network's Mighty Magiswords. And then next week, you'll be able to hear me as the special guest on their podcast, Kyle and Luke Talk About Tunes. To celebrate, I'm having a bowl of Post's O's, which is a cereal that I didn't even realize still existed. Thanks to Kyle, I now know better. They are not the classic apple cinnamon O's that I used to love as a kid, but they are still darn good. They're not called O's anymore, they're now called Honey O's. But other than a couple of small recipe changes, they're still the same oh goodness I used to have when I was a kid. So go sit down, relax, grab a bowl of whatever your favorite Saturday morning cartoon cereal is, and as we always say here on the show, spoons up, let's dig in. Welcome to We Talk Funny. I'm your host, Ken Pringle, and we've got a two-for for you today. You've heard both of these gentlemen on Cartoon Network's Mighty Magiswords, and of course you've heard them as the hosts of the podcast, Kyle and Luke Talk About Tunes. It's Kyle Carroza and the great Luke Ski.
Hello.
Hey, it's me also. Have you had a duo on before?
No, this is the first time I've done a duo record thing like this, so I'm sure I'll regret it horribly later, but right now it seems like a good idea.
Don't worry, you won't regret it again until you've had both Ricky Simons and Richard Horvitz on at the same time.
Oh, man. I've had Ricky on the podcast already, but right. I haven't had Richard, and I can only imagine having the two of them on together.
Yeah, check out our, what episode was it, 150?
Yeah, that was our big episode 150 extravaganza.
If you want to hear us have, like, completely fail to interview people, but have it be just the funniest damn thing you've ever listened to, please check out that episode.
My favorite thing about that episode was somehow we got into this whole thing where somebody brought up the notion of doctors who have an office like at the mall. So Richard kept going off about the mall doctor that he would play. And then somehow the mall doctor was also Nathan Fillion. So he would just keep going like, Ricky, it's me, Nathan Fillion, the mall doctor. You're suffering from squibbles. And then Ricky's like, oh no! And then he would like, so anytime I would try to ask a sincere question, it would be like, nope, we're going to the mall doctor.
I think there was one point during the podcast where Richard left to use the restroom and I asked Ricky some actual questions. But yeah, please check that out. Yeah. It's completely off the rails and very funny.
I'm sure nobody is listening to this podcast looking for actual interview questions. It's pretty much just you want to sit and watch the tire fire burn. That's all it is. So listen, first question I got to ask both of you guys, because it is the same question I ask all of my podcast guests, and I don't even know why I have to ask this other than tradition, but growing up, were you Saturday morning cartoons kid? Of course you were.
Yes, we were, Ken. Yes, we were.
You're like two of the biggest cartoon geeks I know. You have a podcast about it.
Wow, that's saying something.
I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but I still feel like I'm going to somehow blow the format of the podcast if I don't start with that singular
question. It's tradition.
Luke, do you want to go first?
Well, one of the things that Kyle and I just, you know, something that we kind of bonded over when we got to get to know each other is that we discovered that even though we have an age difference between us, we both started watching like appointment Saturday morning TV like the same time in our lives. We determined it was the fall of 82, which is significant because that was the debut of the Pac-Man cartoon. So that was when we both separately in our lives said, okay, I'm setting the alarm and I'm getting up and I'm watching these specific shows. So we were watching stuff before that, but that was when we both got serious about it. So
this is despite being like what, 5 years apart in age?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, and
I was a big fan of the Pac-Man cartoon myself. I won an art contest in elementary school for drawing the characters from Pac-Man. So,
oh, that's cool. Yeah,
I remember it very well. I was like, this is my lucky pencil. This is the pencil that drew the art. I should point out that I have really no art skills whatsoever, but for five, I was great.
But yeah, like around that time, like I was already interested in just cartoons in general because I, you know, in particular watched like the packaged like Looney Tunes and Tom and Jerry stuff that was on our UHF station. But the idea of like tying video games together with cartoons was like huge for me. Like that and Saturday Supercade were for some reason just like completely I completely got into those two concepts being together, even though I was a very small child.
Oh, I'm so with you on that one, man. I was a huge fan of Captain N. Captain N was it for me. In fact, the second time I went to Comic-Con, I was out there doing press stuff, but I decided, okay, you know what? One day I'm going to cosplay a little bit. I'm going to go in costume. And I dressed up as Captain N from the, Captain N, the Game Master. But the funny thing was, is I had to interview the cast of the show Community. And so I go and I'm talking to the cast of Community, and Chevy Chase and Joel McHale look at me and they're like, oh, they see the jacket. They're like, oh, University of Nebraska, go Cornhuskers. Well, what's worse is like, I'm like, oh, well, that's not quite it. All of a sudden, like on the other side of the room, Donald Glover stands up and goes, holy shit, Captain N, the Game Master. That was my favorite show.
That is the best.
Oh, of course, God. If one person in that room is going to recognize that outfit, it's Donald Glover.
It's like, that would happen in character on Community.
Oh my God.
It totally would.
That is the best. Oh my God.
Because, like, yeah. I watched all of Community for the first time over the pandemic, like, all over last year. And so now I get all the references.
Yeah, it's a great show. Great show. But yeah, big old nerd there. And I was very pleased to see it. Now, with all the Saturday morning cartoons, would you say, did you have a particular favorite cartoon, like the one that really stood out for you?
See, now this is like going over like decades worth of cartoon watching, and it's a little hard to
get
it down to one. My favorite television cartoon of all time is the Schnookums and Meat Funny cartoon show.
Oh, all right.
But that was not a Saturday morning cartoon. That was a Monday afternoon cartoon. Because like, you know, when they put out, like, it was the year the Bonkers came out, and they put Gargoyles on Fridays and Schnookums and Meat on Mondays.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I got to say, it's interesting, you know, because I remember Schnookums and Meat. And I have to say, you know, thinking back to watching that show, it's interesting that I feel like while it's not the same, there's definitely some influences from that show that I can see in your very unique art style. Like, there's definitely some comparisons there in sort of the broad action and the way that you kind of exaggerate the actions and the characters. Yeah, that's a fascinating choice.
Oh yeah, I'm a big fan of like a lot of the artists that work on that show. Basically, it was a bunch of people who had just left Ren and Stimpy after the Nickelodeon, you know, Spumco parting.
Debacle.
But, you know, they needed work. And so they all went over to Disney. Disney wanted Bill Kopp to pitch them a show after the success, you know, he had writing on the Roger Rabbit shorts and doing Eek the Cat. And so it was like, hey, here's a bunch of artists that you know, he already would have known them anyway. And so it's like, let's pair this artwork with this writing. And so it's just, that is a magical pairing to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Luke, what about you?
Basically, like he said, there's just so many. And again, if I ordered it, try to pick my favorite of all time, I would probably say either The Simpsons or Futurama. And again, those aren't Saturday morning or even afternoon cartoon shows. But yeah, there's just so many.
All right. Kind of cheating the question there, but I'll give it to you. That's fine. It's
more like I'm not answering your question because if I try to answer it, I will begin talking and not stop talking because I would just literally list every show.
This is all going to bite you in the ass later in the podcast, so don't worry.
Okay.
Now, the other thing I always like to ask is, you know, looking at Saturday morning cartoons specifically, you know, they were almost ritualistic for a lot of kids, myself included, and the big part of that ritual along with the cartoons was the cereal. Did you have a favorite Saturday morning breakfast cereal?
I didn't get to have a whole lot of sugary cereals when I was a kid until my sister was born, because she was a pickier eater and they wanted her to eat anything. So, you know, before that, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of Cheerios, there was a lot of Chex. I've given a lot of hard thought as to what my favorite cereal of all time is, and I have landed on O's.
O's. O's were surprisingly good. Yeah.
And apple still cinnamon is. I still O's. Get it every now and then.
Apple cinnamon O's were, that was my jam. Yeah, good stuff. Luke?
Just like Kyle, and I've never even asked him that before, my mother was also the kind of mom who didn't want us eating sugary breakfast cereals. So mostly in the house we had Cheerios or Rice Krispies. The only time I could get her to get sugary cereals is if, like, every so often I could build the courage to be like, please, mom, can we get something? And usually it was the whole toys and the cereal thing that would be, like, my hook in. So if there was a toy in the cereal that, like, somehow connected to something I was really interested in, I could use that as my, like, way in to get her, let us try some stuff. So occasionally we would get something. But the one that she would most usually fall back on if we were asking for a sugary cereal that she would say okay to was just regular old Frosted Flakes, you know, which is still great. It's Frosted Flakes. So, yeah.
I got to say, I feel very sad for both of your childhoods suddenly. This is awful news.
I mean, I didn't feel deprived. I was enjoying my Chex and my kicks and my just all the it was fine. And then my sister was born 8 years later and I could have Alphabits every now and then.
And to go back to the video games thing, because if I wanted to be like a snarky edgelord about it, I would have said this as my favorite cereal because you wouldn't have been able to find it. Things like Pac-Man cereal, like where it's there's a popular thing in pop culture, let's make a cereal of it, which they still do today.
Oh, Pac-Man cereal was awesome. Okay. Yeah. No, I ate a lot of Pac-Man cereal. It was basically Kix with marshmallows, but for some reason it was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
I was allowed to license cereal every now and then if it was something I was really into. So I did get to get like Nintendo cereal system at least once. And I know for sure I got Turtle cereal because I had the bowl for the rest of my childhood.
I was a big sucker for the licensed cereals. My mom, she kind of went through cycles. Like every 6 months or so, she'd be like, we're going to eat healthy. And it would be like Chex and stuff in the house. And then she'd forget a few weeks later. And it was like, okay, now I can sneak it in. Or I would convince her that cereals were healthy that weren't. I don't know how I pulled it off as an 8-year-old con man, but I thoroughly had my mother convinced that Golden Grahams were a healthy option. But the licensed cereals, that was a big one for me. Like Donkey Kong cereal, C-3PO's, Ghostbusters cereal, Nerds cereal. Like there were so many of them. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cereal, I had that one quite a bit, which was honestly, out of all of the cereals, one of the worst, not bad tasting, because it was a great cereal, but one of the worst applications of an IP to a cereal design. It made no sense, because it had marshmallows that I guess were supposed to represent the turtles, but then the main not marshmallow part of the cereal was Chex. It was Rice Chex.
Crunchy Ninja Nets.
Ninja Nets. And I'm like, a thing that has literally never appeared in a single episode. Never have you seen any of the Turtles or the Foot Clan using a ninja net. Nor is that a thing. It's just called a net.
So I don't think I was like aware enough of Donkey Kong cereal to have had it when I was a kid, but I've watched the commercials more recently. And I like them because they're like the only time. Have you ever seen like that one Donkey Kong poster where it's kind of like it's drawn like old Fleischer style?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so that was like the only time you got to see those animated. Like that is my dream cartoon that doesn't exist is the Fleischer Donkey Kong cartoon.
Oh yeah, because that was back when they really didn't know the character design for Mario very well yet. Like,
well, I mean, what was going on there is that like
and weird and
like that was original. Like, I don't know if you know this, Ken. You might. You're nerdy enough. Like, Donkey Kong was supposed to be a Popeye game, but they couldn't get the license.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right, and so they like got Leslie Cabarga, the guy who literally wrote the book on the Fleischers, because nobody else had like gotten into the history yet. And he knows how to draw like that. and they got him to draw that poster. And so that's the designs they were using for a while.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. And I, they, yeah, they used some of that. I think, was that on the cabinet side too, maybe? I don't remember. But what I'm talking about is, like, once you started going to Donkey Kong Serial and stuff, they kind of started to move from that animation style, but they didn't know what direction they were moving in.
Right, right.
And so Mario looks like this weird, squished character who's about 3 feet tall. And, like, it made no sense whatsoever. But then the Serial didn't make sense either, because it is clearly just a clone of Captain Crunch. Yeah. That is all it was. It was a slightly rounder piece of Captain Crunch. The, all that was in the box.
The yellow barrels. Yeah, it's
yeah. Captain Crunch. Yeah, it's Captain Crunch. It's all
but I will tell you this. My favorite cereal mascots of all time that nobody seems to remember is Apple and Cinnamon, the superhero mascots for Apple Cinnamon Cheerios.
Oh, boy. I have a vague recollection, but no, I don't remember it well.
Yeah, it was just like these two superheroes, one of which is like a more standard superhero, and that's Cinnamon. And then like this kind of just dumpy little guy in an Apple suit that's his Robin, and they think that they can solve things with cereal, apparently. And like they're kind of like they each believe that they have like the best element of this cereal despite being a duo.
Okay.
And like at the end of every commercial, it's like, it's Applelicious and Cinnamon Crunch.
Yes, I remember that. I do remember the I do remember the tag on it. Yeah, the one I missed was the older Cookie Crisp mascots, because now it's the wolf, but before that it was the cop and the robber, and eventually they brought in the dog
Chip.
And
yeah,
Chip. And I wish I'd been there in the room in the marketing agency when they're like, we need to sell this cereal. You know what kids love? Keystone Cops. That very, very hip nowadays. Going, kids love to hang around the old speakeasy and watch some Keystone Cops silent films.
I didn't think it was weird at the time, but I also just, I don't think questioned anything like that. I'm like, cartoon logic, whatever, I'll go with it.
Well, it's the same thing as doing Sugar Bear with the voice of Dean Martin. Like, yes. It's just a Dean Martin impression. I don't know why they thought, well, the kids, you know, they love Dino. And they can't have the rampant alcoholism, but we can ingest them with way too much sugar.
Well, it's like when we were doing Magiswords, and every time we needed a background character, we had to like figure out what dead celebrity we hadn't used yet.
Yeah, that was great. I was sitting there in a session with Ken Mitroni, and I had to do the voice of the guy at the toupee store salesman. And it was like, what should we do? It's like, oh, should we do Bill Silvers? Oh no, we used him for. Oh yeah, and then someone said, "How about Paul Lind?" And I'm like, "Well, if you don't think Seth MacFarlane would mind," and then Ken goes, "We're running out of dead comedians.
Smells like toupees in here, I think."
Well, now speaking of Mighty Magiswords, this is something I wanted to talk to you guys about, because for the listeners at home, Kyle, you are the creator of Mighty Magiswords.
What?
I'm as surprised as you are. I just assumed that I was bringing you on here to talk about geek stuff and, you know, how much you know about Ricky Simons. But apparently you've done work yourself.
Turns out.
Yeah, so it turns out this is the first show creator on We Talk Funny.
It is. That's true. Yeah, this is the first show creator. I was actually saving show creators for this other project that I had in mind, but I'm like, it's just Kyle. Oh, it's just Kyle. I'm not going to save him.
Take that, Doug Langdale.
Which technically, if we talk about the live We Talk Funny, Kyle's the second show creator because Doug was on it before Kyle
was. Doug was on.
Yes, because Doug was a student of mine when I was teaching stand-up comedy, so I had him on a show. But talking about Mighty Magiswords, what was that pitch process like? Like, how did that show come into being?
It was a little unusual because it started out with me walking in with something other than Mighty Magiswords. So around this time, I was working as a storyboard artist and fanboy and Chum Chum at Nickelodeon. Mm-hmm. A friend like invited me to kind of this mixer they were having on the roof. They had a lady who was just starting the brand new position of talent coordinator. And so, you know, I got to go to that party and meet her, and also sit at a table where Jonan Vasquez was very gleefully complaining about modern movies. But like, you know, he's complaining, but he's just having the time of his life. Anyway, so
well, I've always gotten the vibe that complaining is kind of the main thing Jonan does. Like, he's very good at it. It's a lot of fun.
He's very good at it, but he was having fun. but so I had just gotten into Japanese superheroes, tokusatsu, particularly Kamen Rider. And the thing about those is that there's always like some sort of like object or collectible that accesses superpowers that kids can own, like pretty much a one-to-one replica of. Yeah. And I just thought that that was the neatest thing, because it, like, you know, it, sure, it's a toy commercial, but it's one with like an actually good, like they've raised it to an art form. And so that was something I was super into. I had like put together a project that was, you know, inspired by that, that wasn't Mighty Magiswords. And I, rather than have me pitch it, they asked me to send it in because I didn't have a previous like relationship with the people I was pitching to. Mm-hmm. And so, but yeah, I contacted, Brooke Kiesling, the talent coordinator. And when I said, hey, I have a project to pitch, she said, action or comedy, because at that point Cartoon Network was split up into an action side and a comedy side. But what that really meant was that they had like the general, you know, creator driven stuff that they had. And then the stuff that was a little bit more action figure-y, you know, like mm-hmm. the Ben 10 kind of things.
Sure.
That was the action side. And so it wasn't really about the tone, like Steven Universe was on the comedy side. but I was like, well, this is something that is clearly, you know, while it's, you know, a cartoony cartoon, it is kind of a toy thing. I'm going to say action. And that was exactly the right thing to do. So they initially, you know, after I turned it in, they sent me a standard rejection. And I was like, okay, well, that wasn't anything. But, you know, as usual, I tried and I'll try again later. Right. But then about a month goes by and they call me in for a meeting. They did not tell me what this meeting was about. And so I thought I was in trouble. I was like, did I say something untoward on the internet? Are they calling me in to tell me that I'm blacklisted from Cartoon Network forever? I'm pretty sure they don't call a meeting for that. But that's and so they were like, hey, we've looked at this a little bit longer and we think that this is just the style and tone that we want, but we have something else that is a similar concept. And, you know, that's something I hear a lot as a guy who pitches shows. And usually I'm like, yeah, sure you do. But this isn't one where I like had the opportunity to see the thing they were talking about. I'm like, oh, okay, your universe is different. But like the, you know, gimmick, for lack of a better word, is very similar. But they told me to pitch, make like short little pitches to show them that are of the same ilk, the same feeling. And, you know, just send them a bunch of them and we'll see if any of them sticks. And so I was trying to give them like a 5 to 7 page pitch a week, for the most part, kind of remixing stuff I already had. The characters from Magiswords started out as characters I created in high school when I was like just getting into JRPGs. Like someone had turned me into like Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI. And I'm like, I want a party of characters like that. And that's when I made up the Magiswords characters. And so like, in high school, I drew them once and then just kind of put those drawings, and like I had it like intertwined into this high school comedy that I just kept putting everything in. It would be like if Ranma 1/2 had like other show ideas in it because Rumiko Takahashi got bored.
You're just going to every anime and be like, but is there swords in it? Is there swords?
Exactly. And so, and like, it was also, I had pulled these characters out like in the mid 2000s after I'd done the Moobeard the Cow Pirate pilot and I was trying to pitch more stuff. And so like I pulled that out, developed it for a while, put it away, but you know, there were no Magiswords yet, just the set of characters. When they asked me to do this, like it was the second week's worth of stuff that I was sending into them. The second pitch I sent in after they told me to start sending them these short pitches. And I was like, okay, I have these characters. I want to keep doing the like collectible object thing and like use it as a catalyst for cartoon fun. I came up with the swords and I sent them in a 7-page pitch, you know, 4 pages worth of characters, page explaining cover page, the sword page explaining how the swords work. Like, and it just, you know, it was a page of like a handful of swords, like 5 or 6. And I was working on a couple of other ones and I got an email from them saying that that Magiswords was interesting to them and they wanted to give me a development deal.
Nice.
And so from there, I was like working on the second SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water. And like just every now and then they would ask me to fill out a little bit of the pitch package. like, you know, I'd been coming to places with like these 15 to 20 page pitches, and they were like paying me to do what I was giving away for free. And I'm like, oh, okay, lesson learned there. But yeah, and then not too long after that, after, you know, a bunch of months like filling out things, and, you know, they got me started doing a little test storyboard, they were like, hey, we want to greenlight these 15-second cartoons for our new CN Anything app. And it was, you know, there were cartoons where you would see the opening, you would choose what Magisword you proceed with, and then you see how the ending plays out. And we would, you know, come up with both endings. And so it was a choose your own adventure sort of situation. And so it just kind of kept incrementally going, like pretty much right after they greenlit those, like the day I came into work, they had, they said, hey, we're going to do 3-minute shorts as well. Okay, cool. And then they greenlit 5-minute shorts that also had like a choose your own adventure element in the middle. And then not long after we were done with those, they greenlit the TV series. Like, we did a pilot board that we like kind of later farmed for parts. It was like me and Victor Courtwright, who went on to do Thundercats Roar. It's just like the two of us boarding out this pilot. But yeah, they eventually said yes, and we started working on the actual show.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, Luke, you worked on the show quite a bit in a number of different capacities, actually. I mean, you were a voice actor in 20-something different episodes, but you also were a writer on some of the episodes, and you worked as a storyboard artist on a lot of this. How did you go about getting this job, and did it involve living next door to the show creator?
It did not. Remember the scene from the Muppet movie where Fozzie and Kermit pick up Gonzo and Camilla, and they ask, oh, Gonzo, what are you doing? And Gonzo says, oh, I'm going to go to Bombay, India to become the movie star. And then Fozzie goes, you don't go to Bombay, India to become a movie star. You go to where we're going, Hollywood. And Gonzo goes, sure, if you want to do it the easy way. That's basically how I got here.
Tell him that you actually got the freaking job before.
Look, you're ruining his setup for his great Gonzo impression.
The great Gonzo, which, by the way, is back when I was in junior high school, coming up with a, you know, name for a character based on myself that wasn't myself, but sort of was. I thought, oh, the great Gonzo. I want this character is really weird. I'll call him the great Luke Ski. My last name being Sinkowski. It's not like it's a secret, but that Luke Ski came from my name being Luke Sinkowski. So it's like the great Luke Ski was this comic character I invented. So the thing that stinks about that is it was an homage to the great Gonzo, but nobody ever picks up on that because who would? So people think like, oh, he's just this egotist narcissist guy who calls himself the great Luke Ski. It's like, no, it's a Gonzo reference. Ah,
I'm referencing this character by using the one of the two words that is not unusual.
That's the way you think in junior high school. I met Kyle through going back the long way around of getting a connection for a job, because he and I are both involved with a website called The Funny Music Project, which is a website that posts new comedy songs twice a week under Creative Commons licensing, free MP3s people can download. I was one of the founders of the website because me and the other founders are all acts that regularly appear on the Dr. Demento show, which, by the way, yes, he is still alive, and yes, he is still doing his show. He never stopped doing his show. You can hear it online at drdemento.com, and it's still amazing. And because it's on the internet now instead of the radio, there's no commercials and there's no FCC regulations saying that you can't play this or that or have naughty words, etc.
They can say
so
hell
can be
and
all
damn
toy commercials now.
Yeah. So anyway, we set out, we kind of cast our nets out there to the world. We cast our Ninja Crunchy Checks nets out to the world and trying to find other comedy music people to be involved with this thing. And Kyle found us somehow and started submitting songs. And it was like, yeah, these are great, awesome, funny comedy songs. And myself and one of the other founders, a nerdcore rapper named Devo Spice, who's from New Jersey, we started doing a weekly podcast where we would live over streaming on Dementia Radio interview whoever posted the two new songs that week. So then Kyle, being so prolific, would be on the show at least once a month back then in like 2008, 2009. And so once I started to get to know him and find out, oh, you work in the animation industry, I've always wanted to do that. You know, I went to college hoping that I would be able to do that. And that's another tragic backstory I'll save for another podcast if you have another 8 hours. So I'm out there in the Midwest, and I just always wanted to talk to Kyle about his career and just cartoon geekery in general. And then, you know, Devo Spice and other people were just like, oh, it's time for Kyle to talk about tunes. And then after doing that for a few years, everyone's like, you guys should just have your own podcast. And it's like, that's a good idea. So in 2013, we started doing that. So, so once every 2 weeks, and by the way,
that is way closer to 10 years than I'm comfortable with.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so we got the title of Kyle Hook Talk About Tunes just from the way it was casually referred to on the Funny Music podcast.
And here I was thinking that went through just round after round of creative analyzing and narrowing it down and going, no, we're going for the best of the best here. Titles that no one would ever think of.
Let's call it The Great TV. No, it's terrible.
Oh, this is kind of a random thought. So for fun, my mom, you know, when she's at these live events that we do in the Midwest, she likes to call herself Momski because she thinks that's cute. And I just realized the other day, we should be calling your mom TV's mom.
Well, yeah, she showed up to these things, I suppose. Now, she tends to go by Mamala because that's what I used to call her when I was in high school as a result of one Saturday Night Live sketch.
Okay, so back to my completely tangented story here. So we got to know each other and we started the podcast, and then he started talking about working on these the 15-second shorts for Magiswords and then the 3-minute ones, and then he asked me to be a groomsman at he and Lindsay's wedding, so I flew out for that, and by then the 15-second cartoons and the 3-minute cartoons were completely done and animated, and I saw them and I immediately fell in love with this show. It was just so amazing to me.
If I remember right, this is after the wedding was done and I was just like kind of crashing in the house, unable to do much, and I'm like, I can't think. Let's watch these cartoons I made, Luke.
Well, it was also
take advantage. Yeah. Okay. It's the industry equivalent of a non-consensual hiring.
But like all your families were there, and because I had my laptop, it was easier. Like, oh, we'll put them on my laptop, and we'll put them on the, you know, the big TV screen so everyone could see them all. And
oh, right, okay,
yeah. So. But because they ended up on my laptop, I ended up going home with me. So I just kind of kept, we were watching this, and I'm like, man, I really would love to be a part of this. And then I worked up the courage to, you know, ask Kyle and Lindsay because, oh, brief jump back in time. I was visiting in 2013 for another reason when Kyle got a phone call from Cartoon Network about things that might be happening. And Kyle just turned to me and goes, if I need you to, like, move out here and live on my couch for a couple of months and help me make something, would you be able to do that? I'm like, yes!
Now, I do want to mention really briefly here, as you talked about Kyle's wedding there. I just saw photos from your wedding the other day. Mm-hmm. First off, I was unaware that you got married 2 weeks before I did.
Oh, really?
Yes. I got married like 2 weeks after you at my wife and I got married at the mini golf course in Sherman Oaks.
Oh.
Before we actually had the ceremony. But I saw the pictures. You had Candy Milo dress up as a ring bear?
Yes. Yes, we did. Because we don't know any children.
For the people at home, because, you know, this is an audio podcast, and what better than talking about things that are only visual? Candy's in like a bear head and paws.
And a bicorn. So she can interrupt the officiant.
That is fantastic.
Which was my wife, Sarah, who I was married to at the time. Awesome woman, still friends. But it was such great comedy because Sarah can give a annoyed, withered glance so comedically perfectly. So there's Candy in this bear head and just with this little horn, like, and then Sarah would just look at her like, Like with an anime stare of "I will murder you with 1,000 knives." So great.
Oh. I just love it when a plan comes together.
Others would choose to go romantic with a wedding. You go for, you know, Marx Brothers routines.
Well, I mean, our wedding was immediately followed by a 3-hour variety show. Accidentally.
Which, I have to say, I saw your outfit too. Was there a purpose behind that outfit? Were you wearing a Doctor Who bow tie? What was going on there?
Oh, like cleaning up isn't generally what I do. And so we found a way for me to wear a puffy vest while getting married and it involved an adorable little bow tie.
Nice. Nice. Now, for the folks at home who don't know, both of you have had a lot of success doing musical comedy as well. And I want to take a moment here to let the audience hear just a quick snippet of that.
I'm playing Zelda instead of Christmas. I'm too engrossed, so I am gonna miss this. Yeah, I'm playing Zelda instead of Christmas, and I may never Christmas again.
So, having done a lot of different musical comedy, working with Dr. Demento and Fomp and all of that, do you remember what your very first song was for both of you?
For me, I was 16 and he played a song I recorded called Bob from Accounting, which was just kind of like done with the ska setting on my keyboard.
Oh, that's far too professional. I mean, what was the first song you wrote? How far back does it go?
The first song I wrote at all?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I'm trying to remember in what order these things happened in. Like my first recordings were like, I was really interested in music. I was really interested in funny music as a result of, you know, getting into Dr. Demento and Weird Al and They Might Be Giants. And I was like, I want to record stuff, but I have no actual ability to play much of anything. And so I...
And that's when you found the kazoo.
That is when I started watching Carmen Sandiego and saw Rockapella and realized that instruments were not necessary. And so I did these recordings of just pointing one stereo at another stereo in order to do multi-track. And so that's when I did my first recordings. Before that, though, I don't really write parodies now, but like I wrote down lyrics for some. I don't know if you heard my most recent song on the Fump, The Longest Lime.
No.
Back in the 6th or 7th grade, I wrote like the lyrics to some parodies. One of them was a parody of Billy Joel's The Longest Time called The Longest Lime about, you know, being at a county fair and competing with what you've grown, which is the longest lime. What I just did recently is took that kind of updated the lyrics because I can't find the old ones, and then wrote a completely new melody and a completely different style of song for those lyrics, because that's the kind of poor judgment I have.
Taking the beginning, bring it modern. You've gone full circle, so you're done now, right? That's it. You're back at the beginning. What about you, Luke? What was your first song?
Well, my oldest song idea, which I didn't actually end up writing until years later, is one that I think you'd really like. I was riding around in the car and in the station wagon listening to 80s radio, and on the radio was Kenny Loggins, you know, gotta cut loose, foot loose, you know, et cetera. And I'm sitting here going, Weird Al should really do a parody of this, but call it Fruit Loops. And have it just be about cereal, you know. So then I waited around, you know, 20 something years, and he never got around to it. So in I guess that would be around 96 97, when I first started making my, you know, albums, I'm like, I'm gonna write that song. So I finally got around to writing the full song of Fruit Loops, all about the best breakfast cereal. So
now that shows something special. you know, Weird Al is a guy who gets these ideas every day. Oh, great, another terrible pun. And usually that's where it dies. But no, you are going to keep that pun alive and make something of it. You're not willing to let a joke just die in the dark. You're going to take it as far as you can, no matter how much it is not worth it.
I even did my own Foley work in the studio when we recorded that. I brought in, like, a TV tray and a bowl because I wanted to have, like, the sounds of, you know, setting up a bowl of breakfast cereal be like syncopatedly in the things with, like, you know, like rip open the box and then like clunk the bowl hitting the table and then dropping the spoon. And, you know, it was like, it was a big ordeal, but I'm very happy with how it came out.
Now, I do want to come back to Mighty Magisaurs because one of the things I'm really curious about is once the show actually was out there, it was in the public, it was being consumed, what was both the audience reaction like and the studio's, you know, the executive's reaction? Like, were they happy with it? Was it going where they wanted it to go?
I wish that communication was good enough that I could give a clear answer to that question.
I liked it. Let's just say that I liked it and I loved the show and I was like the in-house fan person who was geeking about the show that they worked on to the point of encyclopedic knowledge. So whether or not anybody else liked it really doesn't matter. It's just all about whether or not I liked it. No, I'm kidding. But
yeah. As far as like our you know, direct executives, you know, go, they seemed to enjoy the show. They had, you know, they had notes and, you know, we gradually worked on those notes as we went. But, you know, generally they were pleased. It wasn't the immediate gigantic hit that they hoped it was going to be when it got its first big push. And so they never pushed the show again after that.
Well, now, to be fair here, I do remember that one of the push things they did with it, though, was I remember they had a special programming thing, like a block they did for a weekend or something, mm-hmm. where there was an app and you could scan the TV at certain times during other shows. They did it with the whole programming block where you could scan the TV when the thing popped up and collect a different Magisaurd.
Yeah,
and like,
okay.
That was a whole issue. So
okay, so this is where it gets... This is where I would love answers myself that I don't have. So, yeah, we had our first initial push, and it was very satisfying. It was really cool. Then we had our app, and the app, I super loved the app. I wish it was still something that I could access. That promo, they talk about the Magimobile app plenty, but they never actually say the name of our show. Like, they wanted to somehow push this application and not the show that it was attached to. So, like, that was the beginning of, this is kind of fishy.
That's pretty weird, yeah.
It's like I felt like we were not internally by anybody who was talking to me. Like, you know, any of the promotion stuff wasn't really happening in California. That was happening in Atlanta. So they didn't have to look me in the eye and tell me why they were doing this. But, yeah, it seemed like we were this weird second-class citizen on our own network as far as like the way they promoted it. Like, our characters were generally left out of things except for a few like isolated incidents, which is like a weird thing to do when you have a new show that you're supposedly trying to push.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing an article pop up about a new cartoon network. Oh, which country was it? I want to say like Shanghai or Hong Kong or
we fared those. A little better in other countries.
Yeah, so there's this article, it's like, oh, new Cartoon Network offices open in blah, blah, blah country. And then there was a shot of the wall with, like, all these graphics on it, and there's ProHias. And I was just, like, sharing it, like, and I draw it with my computer. I drew an arrow pointing at, like, look, he's on the wall in another country on the other side of the world, you know.
And then the general consensus on the internet was that the speed of the show was too fast. And I...
Really?
Came to kind of, it was basically just a wild thing I was trying where I like, hey, what if I gave it like this Hudsucker proxy energy? And like, on some of them, I feel like it worked. And on other ones, I'm like, I'm like still learning how to edit cartoons, still figuring out how to cut things out smoothly. And so sometimes the fast speed was just like, I don't know what else to cut, you guys. And so like, you know, when the show started and I saw that, I'm like, you know what? They're right. I'm going to try and fix that. And by the time we got the animation for episode, like the 36th TV cartoon came in, I'm like, okay, there, that's it. We figured it out. But due to the time it takes for cartoons to air. Like, people were like, this guy's not listening to her advice. Well, first of all, you're guys on the internet, shut up. Second of all, I did. It just takes a while for that to happen, you know.
And then when they air, that's like, you know, tune in at 6:45 a.m. weekdays for the new episode of Mighty Magic Squad.
Well, that gets into season two.
Yeah.
So basically, when it came time to, you know, find out whether or not we were getting a season two, they had like these specific things that they wanted us to do. One of them was to, you know, get the timing figured out. One of them was to be less talky, and another was the side characters were testing better than our lead characters, Vammer and Prohias, were. So they wanted me to sell them as characters harder. And so kind of like any amount of like storyline we had going just kind of like went by the wayside while we, you know, got that figured out. And I did exactly what they asked me to. And as a result, I think season two is a fair notch better, both because of these things and because the animation studio was finally picking up what I was throwing down. And so we got all the squash and stretch that we wanted. But season two got no promotion whatsoever that I didn't do myself. They like dropped all the episodes at 6:15 in the morning. Not even 6 in the morning. Not even 6:30. 6:15 in the morning. And any promotion was just me going on Twitter with like the giant plush grep that prototype grep that I have and going, "Hey, watch the show. Good Lord, you're not promoting it. Please watch the show."
Now, speaking of the characters on Mighty Magic Swords, I would be remiss if I did not ask this question. I do have to inquire about the casting on your leads, because the guy you got to voice Prohias is a little sketchy. I don't know where you dug him
up. He's a complete schmuck.
I didn't intend to play Prohias, but when they heard my scratch dialogue, because, like, you know, when I was first making the original cartoons, I'm like, how am I supposed to know how much 15 seconds worth of storyboard is? And so I was making my own animatics with Storyboard Pro and just like recording myself with a blue snowball microphone in my office. And they were like, first of all, that wasn't the voice they were expecting. And then they were just like way into it. Like, we did audition, folks. But they, you know, the network was felt very strongly about my voice. And so I'm like, all right, I'll do it.
Well, it is definitely a different voice. I mean, if you looked at Prohias and you don't know anything about the show, you're going to assume he's going to be more of your traditional, you know, young hero, Yuri Lowenthal type. And that is definitely not the direction you went with it at all, which I think is one of the unique things about the show.
Well, a lot of things that are notable about Prohias' personality were not in the original pitch, but when I sat down to actually write him, like, all these other things came out, especially, like, you know, when I would do things like, you know, have him be motherly. Like, that was both something that I found funny, and also, like, when I would do little things like that, I would get enthusiasm from the executives, and I'm like, okay, I wasn't that sure on what direction I was going on this, but I'm going to follow their enthusiasm.
One of the things I liked about Prohias was that he would have these moments where he would be very concerned about being perceived as manly, but I'm not sure Prohias ever really understood what manly actually was.
Yeah, it's like, I think there's a possibility that Prohias would be non-binary if he knew what that was. So instead, he is like, I guess, challenging masculinity without knowing that he's challenging masculinity. It's like, what? No.
Here's what I understand. I am manly, and if you guys are saying I'm not manly, you're wrong, and I'm just going to do all the stuff I want to do.
Which I think is a good attitude, actually.
And then Gray going for the accent. Was that part of the original pitch? Where did that come from?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely always wanted her to have that accent that her brother didn't have.
Which makes no sense.
Like, we started to unravel the sense that it sort of makes, but then, you know, again, we kind of had to, like, backtrack on having any continuity, so we didn't get to the big explanation, but we sort of had one. Like, okay, screw J.K. Rowling, but I used to read Harry Potter and then, like, fight having a British accent all day because I just read the most British words written in the universe. and so I basically wanted to give Vamber that, where, like, she is so adventure that she has a fake British accent.
Yeah. Like, yeah, she's trying to play this role, and this is just how she perceives it in her head. I could see that. That's great. Now, when you're putting this show together, when you first are going in for, you know, the record session on that, what was that first recording like?
So one thing that was unusual about the show is that, you know, I just kept recording these animatics with scratch dialogue on them because I kind of like wanted to figure out, you know, the timing of the episode beforehand. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of playing those to get the energy, not necessarily get the exact performance. I wanted everybody to do what they were going to do, but just like, hey, here's how this scene plays right now, and now we're going to record it and do your own thing. One thing that I learned from the first session is that I can't do the screamy announcer at the same time as all of the other characters, or else it will completely drain me, and the energy level will clearly go down as the recording session goes along. So what we ended up doing after that first session was do all of the announcer stuff after we had recorded all of the rest of the show.
It's just like doing efforts in a video game where, yeah, the stuff that's really going to kill you, let's just leave that to the end so that you don't butcher the whole session.
Yeah, there was like there was a cartoon in particular where this became an issue where it was an episode about a tree who was a morning DJ and the Warriors had to get his magical sunglasses. And the tree Jay is also a very screamy voice, but not one that's nearly as taxing. But after I've done the announcer voice, I was like just physically tired. And so the tree Jay didn't have nearly the energy it did on the scratch. And one of the executives was upset about it.
Now, having watched a lot of actors come through doing different roles on the show for the two seasons that happened, I feel like this is a particularly good show to learn from. What are some of the mistakes that you see voice actors make when approaching a comedic role?
This is more true of the audition process for some characters. We have some like really over the top female characters who are not necessarily intended to sound attractive. And I ran into a problem where a lot of the voice actors we were trying to cast as Morbidia in particular were too interested in sounding pretty, I guess. Like, I feel like Gray and Candy are especially good at being willing to sound ugly.
Yeah, Gray's voice as Vamber's brain, who Vamber has...
Oh, Candy, like, you mean?
Or, yeah, excuse me, I'm sorry, yeah. Candy Milo's voice as Vamber's brain, who appears in a little cloud next to Vamber, and she has conversations with her own brain. That voice is insane, and I love it so much. It's like this, you know, 60-year-old trucker woman just yelling at Vamper.
Yeah.
Run, maroon eyes!
Yeah, that's great. And then looking at, you know, young voice actors that are getting into the industry, how important, because you've both come from, you know, having done a musical comedy background, how important do you think it is for voice actors to have other skills to kind of enhance their voice acting, whether it's musical comedy, improv, stand-up, whatever it is?
Well, that was kind of one of the fun things about Magiswords is that we had people from, like, very different backgrounds, and that was very much by design because, like, you know, I didn't want it to be the exact same people that were on every show. I had some of those folks, and I had some folks who I was, like, pulling from, you know, people who were my favorites when I was a kid. But I also, like, wanted people who I knew better from stage work. Like, we had Renee Albert playing Gablamica, the Warrior's mom, who I had seen wearing a dirndl, playing the accordion, being very, very tall at a Christmas event that Tom Kenny was hosting. And I was like, who is she? She's incredible. I need to know who she is. And then we had Aaron Hansen on, who is one half of the YouTube duo Game Grumps.
Grumps.
Yeah. And so, like, he had a completely different background where, like, he, like, I don't know if you've ever seen Game Grumps, but it's basically, oh, yeah, like, you know, MST3K for video games. And so they're just like ad-libbing stuff and like rattling off like voices and songs as they're as recording all these videos and just like being on for the entire length of these recording sessions. And so it's just like all these different people with the, like these different backgrounds, and they all had something unique to bring to the show. And so, yeah.
Yeah, having those backgrounds is kind of what brought them to your attention. Yeah, that makes sense. And then, Luke, you've played a lot of different characters on this show, a lot of little minor characters here and there as well. With that experience, is there any, would you say there's unique challenges in bringing humor to supporting characters? And is there a temptation that you have to fight to go easy when you see, oh, it's a character that's just one line here or something?
Well, something that I learned back in, during my college years and after, I was a part of a comedy sports improv team, which is very similar to Whose Line Is It Anyway, where you're playing the set, you know, improv mm-hmm. game type of things. And I was living in Kansas City at the time. And one of the things I learned, I really needed to learn as a young person, was to, you know, be part of that team and be part of that ensemble. It's like, it's not always about, you know, getting the glory for yourself. Sometimes you're the person who needs to tee up the joke so somebody else could knock it out of the park, kind of a situation. And
yeah, I imagine we've all seen like improv shows in which like somebody has an agenda and they have like this idea that they already wanted in there by the time they yeah. And so yeah, you have to learn to not be that guy.
Yeah, we wrote a sketch. Me and Devo Spice and a couple other friends have a sketch comedy group that we called Cirque du So What. And I wrote a sketch for us called Let's Do Improv, where it's me trying to teach the other three guys improv. And one of them is the guy who just can't improv at all, just can't even think of a word to say. One is the guy who denies and refuses everything that's brought up. And the third guy is the guy who just wants to work his weird character into whatever sketch we're doing. And it just keeps building until I freak out and I start screaming and my head explodes.
So, I love this sketch.
So yeah, but yeah, just kind of learning like, okay, it can't all, you know, what, no matter what the thing is, whether it's voiceover or not, it's like, if you're going to be part of a team, you know, trying to create something awesome, then you got to be a part of that team. And then occasionally you'll get your moment where you're the one in the spotlight, but then you have to pass the mic. You have to, you know, do your thing. So, yeah.
Right. Now, I know you both have listened to this podcast before, so you're probably aware that I like to play games on a podcast. I hope you're both up for a game. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. Of course. Awesome,
because I've got something special just for you guys.
Oh, something, no.
Because I know that you're true cartoon nerds, and I wanted to be able to take care of that. So we are going to play a little game called Early Riser. So the way this game works...
Is this all cartoons that Paul Reiser has done voice performance on?
It would be a very short game.
Yeah.
Very short indeed. Though I do need to have another game also called Early Riser that's just mad about you trivia. That's all it's going to be. It has nothing to do with the show whatsoever. So the way this is going to work, there's going to be a number of rounds. There will be 10 rounds. With each round, I am going to say a year. Then I am going to give you the names of four Saturday morning cartoon shows. This is a two-part challenge. You need to be able to tell me, number one, which of those shows in that year aired earliest? And then number two, one of the four shows did not air during that year. Now, it's important to note that we are talking about first run episodes.
Okay.
Yes, sometimes a show we brought back for reruns here and there to fill a time slot. We're not talking about that. But one of the shows never had first run episodes run in that year. And then the other ones, I want you to be able to identify which one started on the schedule, because you guys will remember, and younger listeners don't know this, but it used to be for many years, Saturday morning cartoons would start at 8 a.m. and run until 1 p.m. So you had to get up early if you wanted to catch those early ones. I grew up in Alaska, so it was much earlier for me because I was in a completely different time zone. So I'm getting up when it's dark to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, keep in mind that we are talking about the all three networks, eventually four, eventually five, once you bring in Fox and Kids WB. So you've got quite a number of different time slots to consider. And keep in mind that the programming sometimes would follow certain patterns. Like, you'd have some of your newer shows up front, then you get to like 9 a.m., you know, 10 a.m., your primetime hours, and then the late hours would be kind of your Bugs Bunny shows, your stuff that's like, okay, we're going to play some syndicated stuff before we get into the day. Does this make any sense to you?
Yes. So are Luke and I competing, or are we a team?
You're a team.
Okay.
You're a team. And we're going to see how far this can go. All right. So, first off, the first round will be 1985. Mm-hmm. Saturday mm-hmm. morning cartoons, 1985.
False.
The four shows... The four shows in question are Star Wars Ewoks, Star Wars Droids, Rubik the Amazing Cube, and Kid Video. First, can you tell me which of the four shows did not air original first run episodes in 1985?
I think Rubik was earlier than that, so I think it might be that.
Yeah, because it was Ewoks, Droids, Rubik, and what was the other one?
It's Ewoks, Droids, Rubik, and Kid Video.
And this is 85.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figure we start out, you know, easy. It'll get tougher from here.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, Rubik.
Yeah, I think Rubik is the one that wasn't done.
Rubik is the wrong show.
Okay.
You got it. Yeah. Rubik was 1984. Rubik was 1984. The other three aired in 1985, but Rubik was already done by 85. They had a few reruns in there, but it was done. It only ran for...
Okay, well, Kid Video would have been on later because you want to catch the, you know...
Yeah, I think that was like the transitional show. So yeah. I think Kid Video was last.
And I'm pretty sure Ewoks was before Droids, right?
I think so, too.
Yeah. So I think Ewoks is the earliest one.
So we're going to do Star Wars Ewoks?
Yes.
You're correct. Yeah. Star Wars Ewoks aired at 8:30 a.m., followed by Droids at 9. And then, yeah, Kid Video was a transitional show. That was like 11, 11:30.
This is in our heads instead of knowledge.
Shout out to Robbie Wrist.
True.
All right. Round number two. The year is 1983. We're going to go with, first one, the Mork and Mindy and Laverne and Shirley with the Fonz Hour. B, the Gary Coleman Show. C, Mr. T. D, Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. Which of those four shows did not air original episodes in 1983?
I think Hulk was later.
Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling is the...
You are correct. Yeah, Hulk Hogan was 85.
Let me tell you, brother.
Now, the tougher one, which was the one that aired first?
I assume it would be the Mork and Mindy, because I seem to remember Gary Coleman and Mr. T being on a bit later. But what do you think?
You would know better than I would, because you were older. Like, I remember the Marshall Collective being on, but I couldn't tell you.
Coming to theaters, Christopher Nolan's The Marshall Collective.
So I'm going to go with whatever you...
Yeah, let's go with the Mork and Mindy, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, you have to give me the whole title, man.
The Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley, the Fonz, and a dog voiced by Frank Welker, because of course.
Warner Rooney, big cartoony show.
Oh!
No, actually, all three of them were later shows. The earliest was the Gary Coleman Show at 9:30. Mm. Mork and Mindy wasn't on until like 11:30. It was a transitional show.
Man, I failed.
All right. Round number three, we're going to go to 1991.
Okay.
The shows are Hammerman, The California Raisins Show, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, and Back to the Future.
Hmm.
Which show did not run original episodes in 1991?
I think California Raisins had run its course by then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, California Raisins was 1989. So of the three remaining shows, which one was the early show?
Not Hammerman. That was towards the end.
I remember Back to Future being on early.
Yeah, that seems right. Because I think Bill and Ted felt like a later in the lineup, too. So.
Yeah.
All right, back to the future. It was Bill and Ted. All three of them actually aired quite late. Bill and Ted was the earliest one at 10 a.m. And then Back to the Future was 10:30 and Hammerman was 11. Kind of crazy. Yeah. All right. Round number four, 1995. And the shows are The Mask, Dumb and Dumber, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and Droopy, Master Detective.
Well, given that the first three all definitely aired in the same year, it's Droopy, Master Detective.
You are correct, sir.
Hey. And also, Mask and Ace Ventura were on the same network back-to-back, right?
Yeah, because they had a crossover.
Yeah.
They were. It's so weird to think that there was a period where there were three different cartoons all based around Jim Carrey, all airing, and only two of them were on the same network. It was across two different networks, which is just bizarre.
And did any of them, did they get the likeness rights for Jim Carrey? Because they were... not particularly designed to look like Jim Carrey at all.
Oh, probably not.
Probably not. I have no idea.
Dumb and Dumber is just Craig McCracken doing Craig McCracken before he was famous for being Craig McCracken.
Yeah. I'd assume that Dumb and Dumber is the earliest, but I'm not sure.
I think you're right.
Okay.
You are correct. Dumb and Dumber was a 9 a.m. show. That was coming right into the prime time there. And then it was Dumb and Dumber, and then Ace Ventura right after it, and then The Mask later on.
Do you remember the beaver on Dumb and Dumber?
I don't know.
This pet beaver that looked like Stimpy. I really liked that beaver.
Was it an angry beaver?
No, it wasn't. It was an adorable beaver.
All right, round number five. We're going to go back a little bit to 1990. Have you noticed there's kind of a theme with some of the shows that I pick? The theme's pretty obvious on this one. The four shows are Bobby's World, Camp Candy, Life with Louie, and Little Rosie.
Well, Camp Candy was done by then, I'm pretty sure. Right?
Yeah, 1990. You said Bobby's World, Camp Candy, Little Rosie,
and Life with Louie. Which show did not air original episodes in 1990?
Although Life with Louie is later than the rest of those. So maybe it's that. Maybe Camp Candy was still going.
Yeah, Life with Louie. I mean, Camp Candy was like one season, right?
No, I think it was two seasons.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Which way are you going to go?
Which one wasn't
Aaron? I'm going to say Louie because I think Louie was.
Okay, we'll go with Louie.
You're right. Louie was 95. That was much later.
Yeah.
So
it was a reaction to those shows, but.
It was a great show. I loved Life with Louie. So
I have to sleep on an ironing board.
Oh, I told Edie McClurg when I actually, you know, because I was friends with her and you know, when I first met her, I was like, you do realize that, you know, you've influenced my marriage. And I was like, sure, everybody else remembers Edie from Ferris Bueller's Day Off and things like that. I was like, my wife, every time the cat comes into the kitchen, it's, oh, you can't get a cat. Cats lick the butter. And
cats lick the butter.
It's like my wife's favorite quote from a 90s cartoon.
So good.
All right, so from the remaining three shows, which one aired the earliest?
So Camp Candy, Little Rosie, and Bobby's World.
I think Bobby's World.
I'm not sure. I think I remember Little Rosie being like the first thing on an ABC's lineup. Shoot.
See, I was so not interested in watching that show that I didn't really track when it was airing.
Rosie, Bobby, and Camp Candy. Camp Candy was probably in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, it might be Rosie, I think.
I'm going to say Rosie.
Oh,
it was actually Camp Candy. Camp Candy started at 8 a.m. You would start your Saturday morning animation block with Revelry from Camp Candy. Little Rosie was buried way in the late hours. Little Rosie was like noon.
Wow, okay.
Way late. Yeah, Bobby's World was pretty early, but Camp Candy was right there at 8 a.m.
Rosie was in the contractual obligation slot.
All right, now that we've done
these, host her own special.
Now that we've got these easy rounds out of the way, let's do some difficult stuff. I'm going to take you all the way back to 1970.
Oh, wow. Okay.
1970. The four shows in question are The Amazing Chan and the Chan Clan.
Oof.
The Reluctant Dragon and Mr. Toad Show. The Tomfoolery Show. And Here Come the Double Deckers.
I've only heard of the first one of those, I think.
I wasn't born yet.
I, I'm going to admit I cheated a little bit here. Here Come the Double Deckers is actually more live action, but I love the title so much. I was like, I have to be able to put that
so
in.
Like it was like a Croft thing?
It was a BBC show that came over to the US.
Oh, BBC show, okay. I have no frigging clue, so I'm just going to be guessing, as will you.
Which show did not air original episodes in 1970?
Please list those again.
The Amazing Chan and the Chan Clan, The Reluctant Dragon and Mr. Toad Show, The Tomfoolery Show, and Here Come the Double Deckers.
I thought Amazing Chan was later in the 70s than that.
I don't know.
I'm going to say that because I have even any inkling whatsoever.
Yes. Okay, fine. We'll go with that then.
Was it Amazing Chan?
Okay. It was. Amazing Chan Clan was 72.
Okay.
That was 72. So of the remaining three, which started the air the earliest? And you're pretty much just rolling dice at this point.
Reluctant Dragon.
Yeah.
Hey!
You are correct. Reluctant Dragon and Mr. Toad Show was a Rankin and Bass show that totally flopped, and they had it right at 8 a.m. It only ran for like one season, like 13 episodes, and it was done. It was gone.
Hmm.
All right, round number six. We're going to move ahead one whole year to 1971. And the four shows in question are The Jackson 5 Cartoon Show,
mm-hmm.
Sabrina and the Groovy Ghoulies, The Funky Phantom, or The Osmonds.
Hmm.
At least I've heard of these ones.
Yeah.
Which show did not air original episodes in 1971?
Let's see. So,
you said the Jackson 5.
Jackson 5, Sabrina.
Sabrina and the Groovy Ghoulies, The Funky Phantom, and The Osmonds.
Got any inklings, Luke?
Not really. I don't know. I kind of want to say Sabrina, but I have no logic to that.
I'm gonna say Sabrina because I think they might have needed more time between the Archies airing and her getting a spinoff.
Ah. It was The Osmonds. The Osmonds didn't start till 72.
Oh, okay.
And of the remaining three, which aired the earliest?
Funky Phantom?
Let's say Funky Phantom.
It was actually Sabrina and the Groovy Ghoulies. They pushed that way up to 8:30 a.m.
Hmm.
Which, by the way, if you haven't seen The Funky Phantom in particular, that's worth checking out because it is literally an exact clone of Scooby-Doo. With like kids going around solving mysteries, the only change is they've replaced the dog with a Revolutionary War era ghost.
Right. Oh, we're familiar. Like, I'm asking both of you, do you have a favorite Scooby clone?
Oh, geez. No. No, not really. I don't know.
I don't have a favorite. I don't think this necessarily counts as a Scooby clone other than like maybe it's a person solving mysteries, but just the ridiculous premise of Inch High Private Eye. It's like they pitched that and it was like, let's see if we can make this go several seasons. I don't know.
I think I'd probably have to say maybe Jabberjaw was sort of a Scooby clone in its way. And I'm also tempted to say Dune Buggies. So I don't know. One
you
of those
Speed
two
Buggy?
Stand out from Speed Buggy. Thank you.
Like, I haven't watched it recently, and it is probably extremely problematic, but I remember having some affection for Rickety Rocket.
I haven't seen that in forever.
It's basically the only black Scooby-Doo.
Oh, okay. I have no recollection of that
show. It used
show
to
at
air,
all.
They like, at least rerun it in like this Plastic Man syndicated package, where they like had a different cartoon every week, as well as Plastic Man cartoons.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Have you seen the cartoon that is titled Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, season one, episode, like, 14 or so, is this awesome episode where it's Scooby kind of having, you know, it happens in a dream type episode, but it's Scooby and the Funky Phantom crew and the Speed Buggy crew and one of the other ones, like...
Uber and the Ghost Chasers, maybe?
Yeah, I think it might have been one of those where basically it was like they were all summoned to the same place for like a mystery solving competition to find out which one of them was the best mystery solving crew. It was so good. That show was so amazing.
It was. That was a really fun one. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
I'm sure we'll all meet again in Into the Scoobyverse.
Let's see how you guys do with the other end of Saturday morning cartoons. We're going to move all the way up to 2000.
Okay.
2000, you got four shows here. Pokemon, Digimon Digital Monsters, Ned's Newt, and NASCAR Racers. Which one did not air original episodes in 2000?
I think Ned was done by then. I think Ned's Newt stopped in like 98 or 99. So Ned's Newt.
Yeah.
You are right. Ned's Newt was stopped in 99. Yeah. And then which of the four aired first? I mean, which of the three remaining shows aired first?
I'd assume Pokemon.
So it's Pokemon, Digimon, and
NASCAR Racers.
NASCAR Racers.
NASCAR Racers. I don't remember NASCAR Racers at all. I'm gonna also say Pokemon.
You are correct. Yeah, yeah. Pokemon was 8:30, and they counter-programmed that again with Monster Rancher.
Right.
And then Digimon would be 9. So if Monster Rancher didn't get you, you were gonna switch over to Digimon. And then one of the last years for Saturday morning cartoons, 2002. Mm-hmm. So the four shows are Jackie Chan Adventures, Godzilla, Fighting Foodons, or Mary-Kate and Ashley in Action.
I think Godzilla was done by then because that was based on the 98 movie.
Yeah.
And they would have had that ready, like, at least by 99. I'm going to say Godzilla.
Yeah.
You are correct. Yes, Godzilla was 98. Yeah. And then of the remaining three shows...
I'm upset that I know some of these things.
I don't even remember the Mary-Kate and Ashley one.
There's a reason
you don't remember Mary-Kate and Ashley in Action?
I mostly remember because there was a video game.
Oh, there was a lot of video games. They did multiple games on multiple systems, all basically the same. Yeah.
Well, so Mary-Kate and Ashley, Fighting Foodons, and Jackie Chan Adventures. Yeah. I think
Jackie was on a little later.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's Fighting Foodons.
Yeah.
It is Mary-Kate and Ashley. They buried that at the 8 a.m. slot. It was terrible. It had like half a season of episodes and it was gone.
By the way, Fighting Foodons now available on Retro Crush.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. And I'm gonna bring this back to your comfort zone for the last round. We're going to go to 1987. The four shows in question are My Pet Monster, The Wuzzles, Heckle and Jekyll and Quackula, or The Care Bears?
Heckle and Jekyll and Quackula was way earlier than that.
Sure.
Oh. No, it was The Wuzzles. The Wuzzles were 85. The other three shows were airing original episodes in 87.
Man.
So we got My Pet Monsters, Heckle and Jekyll and Quackula.
And The Care Bears.
What year is this again?
1987.
I'm upset about this Quackula thing.
So the thing you got to remember with Quackula is we're talking Quackula, not Duckula.
Right. No, I know.
Oh, Quackula, okay.
Quackula was the one that directly ripped
off a Scott Shaw comic, and that's why they didn't make more of them because they got their asses sued.
Yes, they did.
I don't know. Care Bears seems like it would have been super early.
Care Bears, Quackula, and what was the other one?
My Pet Monster.
I remember the Filmation stuff being early. But then it might have been syndicated later. I think Care Bears was early, but I think that show was doing too well for it to be the earliest. I'm leaning towards Quackula.
Yeah, Heckle and Jekyll and Quackula.
Yeah.
It was so close. It was Care Bears. Care Bears was an 8 a.m. show at that point. They were leading off with Care Bears. And then the weird thing was Care Bears was immediately followed by My Pet Monster. So they're like, if you don't like this cutesy stuffed animal, how about one that will horrify you and haunt your dreams? Like,
we haven't
really
done a special that has My Pet Monster in it, have we?
I don't remember.
We should find which one that is because I don't remember them talking about that. I don't know if you know about this, Ken, but we've been doing – one of the reasons we did as well – as we did with this, is that we have this feature on our show where we watch an old Saturday morning preview special
I'm
that
very
would air.
Aware.
Yeah.
I just listened to Alvin Goes Back to School. Yes.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So like some of these we would just know, but others it's like we're getting a crash course every other week.
What was that Hanna-Barbera one that was like the Smurfs ripoff that was like the little doggies and...
Oh, the biscuits.
The biscuits. Yeah. Mm. They referenced the biscuits on an episode of Jellystone, which melted my brain. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going for such deep cuts with this.
Carl Greenblatt ain't messing around.
So before I let you guys go, I do want to mention to the listeners at home, this is just half of the episode because we are doing a crossover event.
Yes.
That's right. You're listening to Kyle and Luke on We Talk Funny today, but tomorrow...
Actually, a week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow. Thank you. Okay, a week from tomorrow, you'll be able to hear me over on their podcast.
Yes!
So you can listen to even more of this insanity. Before I let you guys go, do you have any last words of advice for voice actors out there who are just starting to get into the business?
I'm going to let Luke go first for reasons.
Okay. So, because, first of all, just the general notion of things you said earlier about do lots of other things. Because, you know, I've done stage plays, I've done stand-up, I've done musicals, I've done puppet shows, I've done, you know, comic books. I made animated films with an 8mm film camera when I was a kid. It's like, basically, do all the things, perform all the things, create all the things so that you can have a big old arsenal of skills so that when things come up, you're ready to go. So, you know, Kyle didn't just throw me in the voice booth because, you know, he was my friend and I begged him, although he is, and I did. but Kyle,
you asked politely.
So, you know, I got to do, you know, I haven't even done Skeleton on the show yet. I mean, what's going on, man?
I've already done Grub Soul.
I know. One of Kyle's pet peeves is when I make him improv. So I've,
I mean, it was fine the first 20 times.
So, yeah, so there's all that. But I also want to mention, because I got caught up listening to all the episodes of We Talk Funny, because I first listened to the ones that had, like, close friends, like people I know, and then I went back and I listened to all the other ones of people I didn't know personally. And it's just, it's a great show. And just thinking about the Jenny Yokoburi, is that how...
Jenny Yokoburi, yeah.
Yokoburi, yeah, excuse me.
Yeah.
Jenny Yokoburi episode, and just talking about how that story of hers was so great, how, she kind of went away from it and then came back and came to you and, like, asked for help, and you got her, you know, in with your agency and stuff like that. And now she has this amazing career. So basically, I wanted to know if you might be willing to talk to your agency about me. And, you know, you are going to be here tomorrow. And if there was anything here at my apartment.
Well, way to put me on blast on a record here. Oh,
if there was anything at my apartment that you might want to, you know, take from my apartment.
You see normally I would have to be all like, oh, I don't know if I can. I you know, that's so sad. But first off, I'm gonna
Are you having trouble seeing me on your end? Is there anything blocking your view of me for the people listening on the podcast?
For those of you who can't see on the camera, Luke is just stacking box after box after box of chocolate frosted flakes, which he knows damn well is my favorite cereal. And they're hard to find, weirdly.
I'll have to check my Zoom settings. There just seems to be more and more boxes of...
Where did you... this is an entire case of chocolate
blocking the entirety of your view of me. So if you come over tomorrow, perhaps these boxes of Kellogg's chocolate frosted flakes could just suddenly go home with you, and maybe you could think about talking to your agency about having me.
You know,
the great thing here is I'm going to end up talking to my agent, and then after your interview, James is going to be like, "You sold me out for sugar."
You know what I think the chances of Ken going home with all these boxes are?
What?
Great!
See, Kyle hired me because he likes my subtlety. My
Oh, man.
So, yeah, that's my advice is bribe people and maybe you can get on a thing.
Bribe people, use your friends. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Well, you do make a good point, though, there, in that networking is a really critical element in this industry.
Yeah, and in fact, building onto that, I had a number of friends who, you know, we on Magic Swords could only hire, you know, union talent. And I had friends who I would have hired if I realized that they were union, but they didn't tell me, and I, you know, had no reason to think that they were. So, you know, don't be shy. If you have a friend that has a project, let them know that you're available. Either they'll say yes or they won't say yes, or maybe they'll say yes in 2 years. But
that's sort of what got me on the DreamWorks show, Cleopatra in Space with Doug Langdale. Doug was a student of mine. I was teaching stand-up comedy. And actually, it's funny. He didn't tell me that he worked in animation, but his wife Candy was there as well. And we were doing the, you know, getting to know each other in the classroom, and everybody's going around and introducing themselves. And I'm standing up there, and I look at Candy sitting there, and I'm like, I know this is weird, This isn't normally something I do in a stand-up comedy class, but I do have to ask you, is that a Dave the Barbarian tattoo on your arm? And she was like, she was surprised that I recognized it. She's like, you know, this is Doug. He created that show. That was what hit us off. I remembered this obscure cartoon, and I was like, I love Dave the Barbarian.
See, but, like, I first became aware of Doug when I watched the Earthworm Jim cartoon, and I was like, why is this show this funny? I saw the writer's name, Doug Landau, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep track of that. And then, like, for the next several years, I'm like, oh, Doug Langdale's name's in the credits. I need to watch this. Mr. Potato Head, let's watch this.
But yeah, getting to know people, I mean, that's why we do We Talk Funny. It's a big networking event. It's a chance for people to hang out and talk. But yeah, it's played a hefty role in a lot of people's careers, and it definitely pays off.
And also, be a nice person.
Yes. Although, to be fair, you don't run into very many not nice people in the voiceover industry. I mean, that is one of the cool things.
And the reason why is we don't let them in the voiceover industry because they're not nice. So be a nice person.
Yeah, this is definitely an industry where you check the ego at the door. There really is no use for it here at all. We're all just here because we want to play. That's really all it is. It's a fun excuse to just get together and get paid to do the goofy shit we did in high school. So.
but the other things I wanted to say to answer that question is figure out what new thing you bring to the table. Like, bring, like, it's good to have just like the fundamentals and to like just generally be good at performing, but what do you bring to the table? What is new and different about you? I've heard lots and lots of demos where they were perfectly serviceable. I knew that if I were to say cast this person, it would go fine, but I could also cast someone who's more interesting that will bring something unique to the table. Like, you know, I mentioned on another show that, like, sometimes if I had a character that was like a nothing character, I knew that if I cast a particular person, it would end up being funny anyway. Here's a kid. There's like this kid that's just a nothing character. I'm going to put Ricky Simons in there, who sounds like nobody else in the universe. And I got a funny result. That's the type of thing I'm looking for when I'm listening to demos. I'm looking for something unique. I'm listening to something that isn't the same five voices you hear from everybody else.
Well, excellent advice, guys. I appreciate you being on the show. This has been a lot of fun. For you folks at home, you can hear me on Kyle and Luke Talk About Tunes here in just another week. And in the meantime, I'm going to close the show the same way I close every week, with the words my mom would tell me every week when the Saturday morning cartoons had finished. The show's over. Go outside and play.
I will not.